Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on business principles when we come back. You know, we Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, that according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contained 10,799 categories of information, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records about New York residents. Now, all of this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is being gathered and stored in a very reasoned and a very logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, and business in general and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. All right, we're talking about business principles. There are certain things in life, and in particular here in business, that we can quantify. Business can be quantified. There are certain things that some businessmen do that produces success, and then there's other things that businessmen do that produces failure. So as I'm driving down Osage Glenstone in Springfield, Missouri, I look out the side and I see a restaurant that's closed. And I look over here and I see a stereo store that's closed. I see Circuit City is closed. You know, certain stores are closed. But as I was driving past Cheddar's the other day, that's a restaurant chain called Cheddar's, I saw the parking lot plumb full, and a line of people out front waiting to get in. I saw the same thing at Bonanza. I saw the same thing at Olive Garden. Now, as a businessman myself, I'm not in the restaurant business, but, you know, I eat at restaurants from time to time. I eat Olive Garden, Bonanza, and Cheddar's once in a while. I wondered to myself, why is it that this restaurant over here, the Mexican restaurant, which I've eaten at and was pretty good, I thought, why is it closed? And then Cheddar's is open, and you have to get on the waiting list to get in the door. What's the difference? If the people down the street here at this Mexican restaurant just had 10% of the overflow from Cheddar's, Olive Garden, and Bonanza, they would be in Fat City, but they're closed. They're out of business. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's in their business model. It's in their business principles. The people at Cheddar's have a business plan. The people at Cheddar's follow a business cycle or business principle that's something different than the failure down the street, the one that's closed. So little Georgie Gordon, being an educator now, drives down the street and looks for things like that so that I can tell my students, okay, now here's what Cheddar's is doing that the Mexican place wasn't doing, and this is why Cheddar's is successful and they're still in business and the Mexican place is out of business. And that's what I'm passing on to you. These are business principles that I've picked up. I got 151 of them. I just counted them up. And last time, we quit at number 113. I said there are only two business models on earth, number 113. Two business models on earth. It's the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and the 10 Commandments. Both of these business models work. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto is the dominant business model on planet Earth. And it's very successful, and it works like a shot for the people who benefit from it. Now, there are 6 billion people on planet Earth, and the 10-plank business model benefits, maybe it benefits 500 million of those people, about 1 out of 12, maybe 1 out of 14. The other 13 people, the other 12 people, have to support those 500 million people with their labor. This 10-plank model that I have referred to as a business model here is also a political and economic model. And it works for a minority of people, and it works well. And the minority of people, that's doctors, lawyers, politicians, preachers, bureaucrats, monopolists, bankers, it works like a shot. They make millions off of it. It's a wonderful system. I don't deny it. But for carpenters, plumbers, electricians, and waitresses, and home buyers and things like that, it doesn't work well at all. The better model for the little fish down at the bottom of the pond is the Ten Commandment model. The ten-plank model works well for those at the top of the pool, that is the rich, the monopolists, the bureaucrats, the government politicians, the doctors, the professionals. It works well for them. And they have worked hard to sell it, and they sold it, and we bought it. Now, it doesn't work well for us. Now, you can see how well this worked for Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citigroup, and J.P. Morgan. When they ran their businesses into bankruptcy, they went to the government, another branch of the system over here that works well, and they got them, who have our power of attorney, to send us the bill to subsidize them, $29.1 trillion worth. Works like a shot for Goldman Sachs, Bank of America. Now, for the millions of you whose houses are being foreclosed on, it's not working well for you. Not only didn't it save your house, but now you've lost your house and you have to pay them that subsidy money. That's why I said, you know, working just from reason, logic, and common sense, it would have made more sense since the housing crisis, the failure of you and I and everybody else to make our mortgage payments to Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Goldman Sachs. They were faced with bankruptcy. So they went to Congress and they said, look, we need you to give us $29 trillion so that the banking system doesn't collapse. That's what Congress did. And the reason that Congress did is because the banker said, if you don't, we'll collapse, and then we won't make any more loans, and then the whole economy will collapse. Now, all of the mortgages in America were worth about one-half of that $15 trillion. My conclusion was, why don't we take the same taxpayer-guaranteed borrowed money, bailout money? That's you and me. And instead of spending $29 trillion, let's just spend $15 trillion, half as much, and we'll just give that money to the banks for the mortgages, and then every mortgage in America will now be paid off, and every house in America will be free and clear for half as much money. We will give the $15 trillion to the banks. Now, they've been paid off. Now they won't go bankrupt because they've been paid in full, haven't they? That sounded like to me to be a better business model and a better solution. In fact, it follows the biblical Ten Commandment model. It's called, in the Jubilee year, you write off all this debt. It's called the Jubilee. Or every 7 years, it's called the land Sabbath. Now, we didn't do that. And so as a result, we spent twice as much money to bail the banks out. So they're sitting there with all the money. And we still have the mortgage on our house, don't we? That we still can't pay, can we? And so the bank now comes in and takes our house away. So now we spent twice as much money to bail the banks out and lost our house. The Ten Commandment model, we would have spent half as much money and we would have our house free and clear. We had a choice to make, and we made it. And the people that made it for us was our representatives and senators and our president. They made the choice for us because we gave them our power of attorney. We follow the 10-plank to the Communist Manifesto business model. And so that model calls for, we never forgive a debt. We always charge interest on it. And we always foreclose when you fail to pay. The Ten Commandment model is, we forgive the debt once every 7 and/or 50 years. We never charge usury and interest. And we don't use fiat paper currency. We use gold and silver. Now, this school teaches the Ten Commandment model of business, government, and economics, in contradistinction to that 10-plank to the Communist Manifesto model. That's why we're not very popular. So when you ask people, you know, what they think of me, they say, well, he's an antichrist, he's a crook, a criminal, he's a lying, thief, and cheat. That's what they said about Moses, that's what they said about Jesus, that's what they said about Paul and the apostles. And so I shouldn't think that it would be any different if I was to espouse to you the Ten Commandment model. You know, a prophet has no honor in his own country. But I thought I'd share with you what my thinking is on this matter. So I thought I'd tell you what these business principles are and how they work. So last time I showed you that there are only two business models, 10 planks and the 10 commandments. Now, number 114, the free market passes judgment on products, not on the producers. So tuck that one away in your heart. The free market passes judgment on products. And so people buy products like my school. And then they pass judgment not on me, but on my product. Is my product any good? Well, I'm still selling them and I'm still in business. So that tells you that my product is still good. Now, whether it will still be good in the future, we don't know. Will people buy the Ten Commandment model in contradistinction to the Ten Plank model? Well, some people do. Now, the majority don't. Most people, they want to go to the university. They want to go to the Harvard Law School. They don't want to go to the Gordon Law School. Well, the Harvard Law School teaches this Ten Plank model, and the Gordon Law School teaches the Ten Commandment model. The thing that makes me successful is I don't have any competition. There aren't any other law schools out there that teach this Ten Commandment model. And so I have a monopoly on that one little niche of the business. All right, number 115, the entrepreneur takes his orders from his boss. And who is the boss? It's the consumer. There are enough customers out there who want to buy this Ten Commandment model in business, in law, in economics, that they buy the Ten Commandment model. Most people, I mean by the millions, buy the Ten Plank model. But there's enough out there buying the Ten Commandment model that it still keeps our doors open. So you can be a minority. You can just have a little niche business. You don't have to be number one. You don't have to be Sears or Walmart. You can have a store and it's over here buying, selling, and trading. All right, so the entrepreneur then takes his orders from his boss, the consumer. Now, number 116, a monopolist forces himself upon the consumer. And that's what we just saw happen with national health care insurance. You see, they came to us and they said, this is good for you. They're moralists. Monopolists and bureaucrats are moralists. They said, we've decided that this is good for you. Now, I'm little Georgie Gordon, and I'm one of 44 million uninsured Americans. I don't have any health care insurance. It isn't because I can't afford it. It's because I don't want it. If I wanted it, I'd go out and buy it. Now the government has come to me and said, well, we're going to make you buy this because the majority of us here in the Congress have come to the conclusion that this is the best course of action for you, Mr. Gordon. And since you weren't smart enough to do this for yourself, we're going to do it for you. And if you don't follow our instructions, we're going to fine you. We're going to punish you. We're going to take away your property, take your cows, take your land, put you in jail. We're going to do something to you. See? So monopoly and bureaucracy doesn't work by consent. It works by coercion. How many of you people would go down voluntarily and get a driver's license if it wasn't the law, or register your car, or buy insurance on your car? You do that because the legislature, a monopoly, a bureaucracy, created the law based upon your power of attorney. You voted them into office. You gave them your power of attorney, and they decided for you that you should have a driver's license, registration, and insurance. But it's not done because you want to. You do it because you have to. And it may be a wonderful idea. It may be good for you. I see the government today, they're telling us that too many of us are fat. And I don't know, you know, if you weigh 300 pounds and you're 5'5", can you tell that you're fat? Are you able to see yourself in the mirror? Are you able, you know, to come to that conclusion? I can come to the conclusion that I'm overweight. Now, the government comes along and says, well, we got to do something about this. And so what we're going to do is mandate that McDonald's do this, that, and something else. You know, and I'm sitting here saying, why should we mandate that McDonald's do jack squat? You people that buy from McDonald's evidently like that product, or you wouldn't be there buying it. You'd be over at Burger King or Wendy's or somebody else, wouldn't you? Sonic. I'll tell you what I'm opposed to. The government creates a monopoly. And then when little guys like us want government to put the label on the can so that we can choose, they won't do that. The food industry will not put GMO on their cans. In fact, they went to the government and they said to the legislature, do not put GMO on the can. Don't force us to label the can, because they know that we wouldn't buy their product if it had GMO product in it. So the government works with this monopoly called the food industry. Then they want to regulate the food industry over here and tell them that they can't put salt, or they can't put this fat, or. Can you see the duplicity there? So I'm of the opinion that we ought to leave everybody alone and let them decide for themselves. You know, you fat people out there, you're fat because every pound that you're carrying around was put on your body by sticking it first in your mouth. There isn't anybody that stuck a gun to your head and said, open your mouth. You know, it isn't like you got a kid sitting in a high chair, you know, and you're sticking the spoon in his mouth whether he likes it or not. I mean, you did it all voluntarily. So, you know, if people want to be fat, why don't we leave them alone and let them be fat? And somebody says, well, that's not good for them. Well, of course, I agree. I don't think it's good for you to be fat. But who in the hell am I to go around here telling you how you should eat? Well, let me ask you this. If I came up to you and McDonald's, slapped you up across the face, and took your Big Mac away from you and said, no, Mary, you cannot eat that Big Mac. Can't you see how fat you are? Here, eat these Brussels sprouts. What would you think of that? Well, then, can you please explain to me why it is that some bureaucrat in government someplace in Baltimore, Maryland, or someplace can do the same thing by enacting a law and making you do this, that, or something else by some other means? And I'm sitting here saying, you know, it's probably true that you shouldn't eat that Big Mac, but isn't that what freedom is all about? isn't it your freedom of choice that we're dealing with here? You know, that's what the Ten Commandment model is all about. It's about freedom of choice. It's not about coercion. It's not about telling you you have to do that. And there's a law that says thou shalt not steal. You know, but God isn't over here slapping you up alongside the head when you go over here and you boost something out of the store and stick it in your purse now, is he, Mary? There's a penalty for you to pay, but, you know, there's a penalty for you to pay for eating that Big Mac, but God isn't over here slapping you up alongside the head saying, no, you can't eat that. All right, so now when we're dealing with freedom of choice, you know, the free market passes judgment on products, not producers, and the entrepreneur takes his orders from the consumer, and the consumer is the boss. So, number 116, a monopolist forces himself upon the consumer. I'm not forcing myself upon you. I'm not forcing you to go to law school. And I come to you and I say, here's what I've got. If you like it, come buy it. If you don't like it, leave it like. That's what an entrepreneur does. That's where freedom of choice comes in. So, McDonald's came to you and said, eat Big Macs, and you bought it. And as a result of that, you got fat. Okay, so anytime you wake up to reality, you can stop doing that. But shouldn't that be your choice? Shouldn't you be the guy that chooses whether or not you want to buy health care insurance? I don't like the idea of it being forced on me. Fortunately, it's not being forced on me. It's being forced on you. But I just thought that I'd share that with you. Now, I'm not going to buy health care insurance. And then I'm not going to get fined either. I'm an exception, an exemption. There are exemptions and exceptions here in the law. That's why we have law school. That's so that you can learn what these laws are and what the exceptions are so that you can choose for yourself, do I want to do that? Ignorant people that don't know how to avoid it are going to be forced into it. I was watching the McLaughlin group the other day, and they were talking about this very thing. And the woman from, what is it, Newsweek, she said, well, she thought it was a good idea that government provide for and make people buy health insurance because they couldn't do it for themselves because they were stupid. And then, you know, the two conservatives on there, they say, well, we think it ought to be a matter of freedom of choice. Well, I'm with those conservatives. I think that you should be able to choose. And, of course, monopolists and bureaucrats don't think that choice comes into the matter. But here in the business model, here at the law school, we practice that freedom of choice business model, and we advocate that for everybody. All right. An entrepreneur believes that competition is a virtue. I can compete with the Harvard Law School. I'm not asking you to put the Harvard Law School out of business. I don't need that. I can compete with Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. I don't have any problems at all. I can compete with Walmart, Kmart, and Target all at the same time. I just want a level playing field where, you know, I can present my ideas, called free speech, into the marketplace, and those guys can present theirs into the marketplace. And then if I was selling something, you know, I wouldn't sell a fat hamburger because I think that's bad for people, and I want to do unto others as I'd have them do to me. No, I wouldn't have somebody sell me a hamburger that's got 10% kangaroo meat in it. I think that that ought to be labeled, you know. Now, for instance, I don't want to eat kangaroo meat. And there's a lot of other people that don't want to do that. But they don't want to tell us that they've got 10% kangaroo meat in there because they know that there's a bunch of us wouldn't buy that. All right, so the entrepreneur then, that's number 117, believes that capitalism is a virtue. Number 118, the free market produces the most products and services for the longest period of time to the most people at the lowest cost. That's the free market. It's always been that way. The free market produces the most products and services for the longest period of time to the most people at the lowest cost. Now, number 119 is exactly the opposite. Monopoly and bureaucracy produce the least amount of goods and services for the shortest period of time to the fewest people at the highest cost. So if you take a look at the bureaucracy over here, for instance, the senators and representatives, those senators and representatives in our Congress work on average 2.6 days a week, 134 days a year, for which they get paid. Now, the rest of us work approximately 40 hours a week or 5 days a week. Now, you and I make $50,000 a year, and those senators and representatives make $200,000 a year. So they make four times as much and work half as much. Now, tell me that the 10-plank model doesn't work for Congress. Hey, it works wonderfully for them, but they're a very small minority. There's just 535 of them, and there's about, you know, 100 million of us workers out here. And we're looking for, we workers, that's you and me, we're working for a system that produces the most for us. Now, the free market system will produce the most for the most people at the least cost. It's always done it in the past, it does it now, and it will continue to do so in the future. Now, the monopolists and the bureaucrats, they don't like that. They don't want that. What they want to do is they want to control you and I and compel us. And they do. They use compulsion. They use force, coercion, threat, and fear to keep us in line and to keep us producing for this minority. And it works. I'm not arguing with that, with the fact that it works or not. Hell, it's been working for thousands of years. It's just that it's not fair, it's not ethical, it's not right. But it's what we bought. They went out into the marketplace and they said, here's what we're selling, and we bought it. they came out here and they said, we're selling a bank bailout, and we bought it. Okay, so, all right, so now we got to pay for that. And I think it was a mistake, but then, you know, I'm not here to argue with the best judgment of the voting public. Number 120, the best example of a free market at work is marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. The best example of the total failure of a monopoly and bureaucracy is marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. I mean, you can't beat what you see with your own eyeballs. Now, here's the bureaucracy. They've got a monopoly, and the monopoly is the pharmaceutical industry, and they want to abolish marijuana, cocaine, and heroin sold on the street corners by entrepreneurs like, you know, Joe and Tom down on the street corner selling, you know, little weed. Now, I want to point out that marijuana, cocaine, and heroin are good for people, really good. And the reason I know that is because all of the pharmaceutical companies sell it. For instance, marijuana is for sale at your local Rexall store, and they've got a trade name for it, and it's, I can't think of the name for it now. And cocaine, they have a name for that. It's called Ritalin, Ritalin. And heroin, they've got a trade name for that, and I forgot the name of that one too, but. And so we know it's good for us, and we know it's good for people. And it's sold. And here's the kicker: it costs five times more to buy marijuana, cocaine, and heroin from the Rexall store than it does down on the street corner. Nobody in America, and I would submit to you that there's nobody in the world that's opposed to marijuana, cocaine, or heroin. Everybody believes in it. Merck, Pfizer, the Congress, the doctors, everybody. What the disagreement is over is who is going to profit from it. So they're just arguing over turf. So here in America, we spend about $2 billion a year trying to stamp out marijuana. Boys and girls, marijuana is the biggest cash crop in this country. It is bigger than wheat. It is bigger than corn. It is bigger than cotton. It is bigger than soybeans. Those are the four biggest crops in America. And marijuana outsells all four. And the four biggest crops, wheat, corn, soybeans, and cotton, are subsidized by the American taxpayer. We have subsidy programs. We have agricultural extension services. We have agricultural loans for farmers to grow these crops. The marijuana producer doesn't have an agricultural extension agent. He doesn't have any farm loans. He doesn't have the soil bank. In fact, he has to do it all without any help from government whatsoever. And if he gets caught, he'll get punished. He'll get thrown in jail. His crop will be destroyed. He works under incredible threat, fear, coercion. And yet, he produces more dollars than the wheat farmers of America. He produces more dollars, more profit, a bigger crop than the cotton and the soybean producers. Now, the monopolists, by contrast, are spending $2 billion a year to stamp it out. And they've got ad campaigns and the police working, and we've got jails that are full of people. About half the people that are in our jails are there because of drugs. And what we've locked these people up for is buying a product that they want to buy, and for buying a product that Rexall wants to sell. But you see, these people didn't buy it from Rexall through their local doctor, so they broke the law and they go to prison. They went down on the street corner trying to buy it on the cheap, trying to cheat the doctor, trying to cheat the pharmaceutical industry, trying to cheat Rexall out of their profits. And so as a result of that, we have to lock those people up and put them in jail. It's not because we're mad at them because they're smoking dope or because they're shooting up heroin. But we're not mad at them for doing that because we do that legally. But it just costs five times more. Now, if we had a free market system, which is what we had before, you know, there was a time when it wasn't against the law for you to buy heroin, cocaine, or marijuana. We created those crimes. We created that problem. I mean, you know, if you want to make another problem, what you do is you outlaw tobacco. And you know what will happen? You'll have a black market. You'll have a free market spring up around tobacco, and you can have the same problems with tobacco. I mean, you could ban Big Macs, and you'll have the same black market come up there. People will be sneaking around on the street corners and selling Big Macs out of the sleeve of their long coats. You can do that by simply outlawing it. All right, now I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page, and you can download it right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we're citing here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles, and the one we just covered here. So let's take a look at the best example of a free market in operation is marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. Now, I'm not advocating marijuana, cocaine, and heroin, either from Rexall or from Joe down on the street corner. That's called witchcraft. It's strictly prohibited in the scripture. So I don't participate in any of it. But as a business model, I want to point out to you that the free marketplace could deliver coffee and gasoline to Sarajevo in Bosnia when artillery shells were raining down on the city. They could deliver coffee at $4 a cup and gasoline at $20 a gallon in 1995. Now, that's what the free marketplace can do. Now, take a look at Iraq today. The United States of America has been in Iraq. We have spent $1 trillion there. After 7 years and $1 trillion, the people of Baghdad have electricity on average 3 hours a day. Under Saddam Hussein, they had electricity 24 hours a day. So if you were to ask the people of Baghdad, are you better off today under U.S. occupation, or were you better off under Saddam Hussein, I'll just leave it to you to answer the question. Today, the people of Iraq have gun control and income tax. Under the old regime, under Saddam Hussein, they had no gun control and they had no income tax. I just want to ask you, were the people of Iraq better off under Saddam Hussein, or are they better off under American occupation? Now, we have brought to them socialism. We have brought to them the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, where they were lacking in those planks. We have filled that need for them. But I don't know that that makes the average Joe Sixpack's life better. It certainly makes the bureaucracy's life better. It makes for the doctors' lives and the professional lives and for the bureaucrats' lives, it makes theirs much better. I wouldn't doubt that. But again, are we trying to satisfy 27 million Iraqis or maybe, you know, 1 million bureaucrats? It's a choice that the free marketplace makes, and the free market produces the most for the least for the most people. And the 10-plank model produces the least for the fewest at the highest cost. It's a choice that we have to make, and it's a choice that we Americans have made, past tense. We chose the socialist model that produces the least at the highest cost for the fewest people. And so I'm just suggesting to you that maybe a change in our business model might be in order. I mean, if you wanted to change that. If you like what you've got, stick with it. If you don't like what you've got, then maybe there's a little room for change. All right, now the free market, number 124. Excuse me, number 123. Number 122. A free market and competitive capitalism have always produced a surplus. So if you want to stand in line and share the shortage, you can't beat communism. You can't beat the 10 planks. Standing in line and sharing the shortage is the rule. Now, if you want to have a surplus, then monopoly and bureaucracy have always produced a shortage, and a free market and competitive capitalism have always produced a surplus. That's number 122 and 123. It's just that simple. Number 124, the free market does not legislate morality. Number 125, monopolists and bureaucrats legislate morality. Those are the people that decide that you're too fat and that we need to take you off of McDonald's. Those are the people that decide that you don't have health insurance and you need it, whether you want it or not. Now, I'm not opposed to people buying health insurance, and if that's what you want, you know, get after it. Now, should your health insurance be paid for by other people? No, that's really a thought. Let me put the shoe on this on the other foot here. Let's suppose that I'm standing out on the street and I'm flat broke and I don't have any money. And you are in McDonald's and you are ordering a Big Mac and some fries. Now I come in with three other guys, three of us that are out on the street, and we say to you, we think that it is unfair for you to come in here and buy this food and eat in front of us. And we think that you should also buy food and feed us. What would you think of that? Now, there's no doubt that I'm hungry and that my two friends are also hungry. And there's no doubt that we need to be fed. That's pretty obvious. But is it your responsibility to feed me? Should you be compelled? For instance, I'm gonna put it a little more strongly to you. I'll put it this way. And if you don't feed us, I'm going to beat you up. I'm going to take your food and stuff it down your trousers. I'm going to punch your nose out. So you might say to yourself, well, you know, I guess I better buy this guy a Big Mac and fries because if I don't, he's going to hurt me real bad. But is that the right way to be? Now, that's what you people that are voting for national health care here in Missouri, we just had an election yesterday, and they put this on the ballot, and they said, do you think we should have the compulsory insurance factor with punishment? And the people in this state voted 76%. No, we shouldn't. But 24% of the people said, yes, we should. So that's what I wanted to bring to your attention. You 24% that voted for that, excuse me, do you believe that you should have the power to compel me to buy this insurance? Well, then let's put the shoe on the other foot. I'm selling law schools. Shouldn't I then go to the legislature and go to the legislature and tell them, look, everybody should have a legal education. It's in their best interest so that bad people won't take advantage of them. And therefore, they don't have to buy my law school, but by law, they have to buy law school from some law school somewhere. They have freedom of choice. They can buy it from Harvard, Yale, Princeton, or George Gordon. But they have to buy it. And if they don't, we'll put them in jail, we'll give them a fine, we'll punish them for not having a law school education. And that's because I believe that a law school education is very valuable. It will protect you from bad people who are trying to take advantage of you. And these people are saying, well, you need insurance because it'll protect you from death and disease and from not being able to buy the health care that you deserve and ought to have. Now, the question, I guess, devolves upon, well, who's going to pay for all this? You know, it costs money to send you to law school. It costs money to buy you this insurance. Has it occurred to us that not everybody is entitled to everything that they would like to have? For instance, I think that everybody should have an automobile. There are a lot of people out there that do not have automobiles. Well, I have an automobile, and you have an automobile. Do you think then that it's incumbent upon us to buy this third guy an automobile because he doesn't have one? Now, you and I got an automobile. We went out and worked, and we made money, and we earned, and we sacrificed, and we decided that that's what we wanted to do, and we did it. Don't you think that everybody should have the same opportunity, an even playing field, and that if he decides that he doesn't want an automobile, he'd rather have an airplane or maybe a snow machine or something else? Say, I don't have a snowmobile, and I don't have an airplane, and I don't have a Lexus. Should you be compelled then to furnish me with a snowmobile, an airplane, and a Lexus? Should you have the power to compel me to take, to use a snowmobile, an airplane, and a Lexus, even if I don't want them, because you decide that that's what's good for me? You have a snowmobile, so I should have a snowmobile, and so should everybody else in the country. Has it occurred to any of you people that not everybody in America wants a snowmobile, an airplane, or a Lexus? And that's what the free marketplace is there for. And that's what freedom of choice is all about. It's about people who decide for themselves whether they want a snowmobile or not. Now, you know, it takes a lot of sacrifice and a lot of work to buy a home, to buy a house. I mean, you got to get up in the morning and go out and work hard to get the down payment and go out and buy a house. Not everybody wants to do that. Many people just want to rent. Shouldn't we compel everybody to have home ownership? I mean, only 66% do. The 34% that don't have home ownership, shouldn't we compel them under force of law to buy a house? And if they don't have the money, shouldn't we nationalize it, tax everybody, so that we can furnish them with houses? Shouldn't those people be compelled to go out and work just like we did to provide what they want for themselves? Is there some reason why they can't have home ownership? All right, that's what freedom of choice is all about. The free market does not legislate morality. It's monopolists and bureaucrats that legislate this morality. The free market is predicated upon thou shalt not steal. And when you come over here and say to me that I have to buy this insurance policy, you're stealing from me. You're stealing my labor. You're stealing my money. You're compelling me to spend my money on something that I would not voluntarily spend it on. And you're saying to me, but that's in my best interest. That's what's good for me. Who in the hell made you God? Who in the hell made you the authority that decides what's good for me? Who in the hell is it that legislates and makes Big Macs bad for you, even though you weigh 300 pounds? You know, when I see some guy walking down the street that's overweight, my conclusion is he wants to be that way or he would do something about that. Now, you can sit there and say, well, he doesn't have the character to do that. Maybe he doesn't. But what business is that of mine or yours? You know, America used to be the land of the free. And now I find that we have a bunch of people out here, moralists, bureaucrats, monopolists, who are trying to tell us how to live our lives, trying to tell us that we have to have health care insurance whether we want it or not. Now, 76% of the voters who voted yesterday, I'm not one of them, but 76% of them that did vote yesterday said, we don't want this health care forced upon us. That didn't make any difference to the Congress. They said, we don't care what 75% of you people want. We're going to tell you what you need, and we're going to make you do it, and if you don't, we're going to punish you. I'll mull that over a little bit. That's not the free market. That's coercion. That's threat. That's force. That's what the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto sell. It sells force, threat, coercion, fear. That's what the program's all about. Now, I'm suggesting to you that maybe you might want to buy something else. Maybe in the future, you know, you might say, well, that's what I've been buying in the past. I think I'll quit doing that. See, I used to be a communist for many years until I was 37. That was the year I learned to count. I was 37 before I could count. Then when I analyzed this and I said to myself, is this good for me? And my conclusion was it's not good for me. So I said, well, I'm going to quit buying that. And I did. And I've been very happy from that point on. So the free market is predicated upon thou shalt not steal. That's one of the Ten Commandments. Number 127, monopoly steals free choice. And that's what monopoly does. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto is monopoly, and monopoly steals your free choice. And the Ten Commandments say thou shalt not steal. Now, number 128, God, the Creator, is the world's number one monopolist, the world's number one bureaucrat, and the world's number one moralist. And number 129, monopoly, bureaucracy, and morality are the exclusive domain of God, and all others are an inferior counterfeit. Now, there is a guy out here named God. We call him God. You Muslims call him Allah, and the Buddhists call him Buddha. And, you know, people have different names for the Creator. So whatever name you hang on him, you know, it could be Yahweh or Yahshua or Jesus or Buddha or whatever. There's a guy out here that those of us that are religious guys, you know, we look to. And he has some standards, and he says, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt do no murder. That's the world's number one moralist. But he has not told you that you have to buy health care insurance or that you have to pay him his tithe. He told you to pay the tithe, but he didn't punish you if you didn't. You're free to pay the income tax. You're free to choose. In fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 30, he tells you to choose. The Ten Commandment model and the Creator God himself is a paradigm of freedom of choice. He encourages people to make the right choices. In fact, in the book of Proverbs, very first chapter, he starts off and he says, you know, the wisdom, understanding and knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Three things that you really want to get a lot of, knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. He says, ask of me and I'll give it to you. And he says, you want to look for it. It's like rubies. You want to hustle for it. But he's not out here knocking you up alongside the head and making you get wise, you know, or understanding. He's not throwing you in prison, you know, for smoking dope. That's these counterfeit moralists down here doing that. That's these monopolists. The guy that's mad at you for not buying Marinol, that's the trade name that Rexall and the pharmaceutical industry uses for marijuana. They call it Marinol. I thought of it now. Marinol. M-A-R-I-N-A-L. Marinol. Okay. God doesn't want you smoking dope, and he told you that that's an issue of witchcraft, and he said that's bad for you. Don't do that. But he's not throwing you in prison because you're smoking dope. You got a right to choose. The guy that wants to throw you in jail is the guy who's in the legislature because you're not buying Marinol and paying five times more for it. That's the monopolist. That's the bureaucrat that's doing that to you. All right, so now when we take a look here at monopoly, bureaucracy, and morality, that's the exclusive domain. That's the exclusive bailiwick of the Creator himself. All the rest of these guys out here that are foisting this morality off on you are counterfeits. All right, number 132, unlimited freedom of choice is anarchy. There has to be rules. And then the guy that makes the rules is the Creator, and he said so. And number 131, all other limitations on freedom of choice is usurpation of power. And all freedom of choice is limited by the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments then limits your choice. And any other limitations other than the Ten Commandments is a usurpation of power. And unlimited freedom of choice is anarchy. So we have to have some rules. And the rules that we've chosen are the 2.5 million rules, regulations, and laws of the United States of America. And they're adding to it at the rate of 47 pages a day. God has 759 statutes, 10 commandments, 133 subjects or subject matters of law. A fairly simple, easy, straightforward rule to follow. Freedom of choice is right in there. We made a bad choice, in my view. I think choosing the 10-plank model wasn't all that good of an idea. All right, so 129, monopoly, bureaucracy, and morality are the exclusive domain of God. All others are an inferior counterfeit. Number 130, all freedom of choice is limited by the Ten Commandments. Number 131, all other limitations on freedom of choice is a usurpation of power. And number 132, unlimited freedom of choice is anarchy. Let's see if I got a minute here. Yeah, I got about 1 minute. Number 133, coercion, force, threat, intimidation, and fear are incident to monopoly and bureaucracy. Number 134, freedom of choice without coercion, force, threat, or intimidation is incident to the free market. So there's your choice. Do we want threat, coercion, fear, intimidation, or do we want freedom of choice? Do we want to be able to make our own choice without coercion, without force, without threat, without intimidation? If this freedom is worth anything at all, isn't this freedom worth applying to the marketplace? Shouldn't we insist that our legislators, if they're going to legislate, put the food industry on notice that they have to tell us that there's GMO in the package so that we can choose whether we want to buy it or not? They seem to think that they can force McDonald's and others to change their menu or to change their ingredients so that you won't get fat. Shouldn't we insist upon having the freedom to choose? Hey, I'm out of time here, boys and girls. We'll have to leave it right there and finish this next time. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's where you're listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.